Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. The Crop Consultant Conference kicks off today at the Visalia Convention Center. First up on the schedule, a session by David Haviland. I talked with Taylor Challenstrom to hear more about that session.
Yeah, I want to talk about their session that is going to be put on by David Haviland, who's an IPM farm advisor for Cooperative Extension. It's going to be about nut pests and specifically managing nut pests in a down market, you know, where to skimp and where to spend. And what David will be talking about in this session is there's these sprays that a lot of growers apply, tree nut growers in May, called May sprays. And he'll be explaining why growers may be able to eliminate May sprays and other applications, but that they also need to monitor and take integrated pest management into account there.
And that is a really interesting topic because, especially right now, our farmers need to not be just throwing money out into the orchards and having it not be effective. So when they're looking for a way that they can really effectively use their money from a business perspective, this is one of the things they can be looking at.
Yes, with things like the drought, the current drought, seriously affecting water costs and, you know, growers' bottom line right now, it's really tough to save money. So, you know, these types of sprays, you know, might, depending on the presence of a certain pest in your orchard and the numbers, you might not need the spray at all. But a lot of growers just do the spray anyways, just, you know, because it's a normal thing that is done every year. But, you know, you might not even need it in general. And some of the pests that David will be referencing are the management of the peach twig borer, navel orangeworm, of course, leaf-footed bug, and also spider mites.
And of course, management of all of those is important, but if there's a way you can do it without spending money where you don't need to, then that's always helpful for the growers.
Indeed, yes. And these each of these pests aren't going to, you know, they're not going to have the same scenario with the May sprays. You know, there are associated population numbers and monitoring that needs associated population numbers that you need to look for and monitoring that needs to take place before you determine, you know, if the May spray is needed. But if you do determine that the May spray is not needed, then it can save you a buck at the end of the season. And, you know, those bucks add up.
And really, this is a great time to learn more about that because it gives you several months to be watching for these things and to make your plan before your May spray.
Precisely, yes. In the off season, growers can, you know, take in this information and consultants, you know, specifically the ones that will be at the conference, can relay that information to growers that, you know, they might not need to make this extra spray and spend that extra money. And that is just a super important thing for them to know right now, especially.
Later today, we have a session on artificial intelligence and agriculture. I talked with the speaker about his session.
So I'm Elia Scudiero, and I'm an associate research agronomist at the University of California, and I'm located at the Environmental Sciences Department. I also have a joint appointment with the USDA ARS at the U.S. National Lab for Research on Salinity and Water Scarce Farmland.
And you will be speaking at the Crop Consultants Conference coming up in September. Tell us a little bit about what you're speaking on.
So I'm talking about a recent advance on computing in agriculture or agricultural data sciences, and specifically on how artificial intelligence-based tools might help consultants enhance the recommendations that are going to do in the field. So we'll describe a little bit some ongoing research here at the University of California and other institutions, especially in the U.S. Southwest, on production agriculture with a focus on water management, salinity detection control, nutrient management, and as well weed and disease detection, and especially on the use of high-resolution imagery that can come from drones or smartphones or satellite data, and how this can data can be integrated with and analyzed with machine learning and advanced computing, so that basically we're gonna take a look at soil, especially because that's my my primary areas of expertise, and soil plant water relationships. So we are going to describe a little bit about what's available there in terms of available tools that the farmer can already get their hands on from the ag tech industry, but as well what is being developed at the university and with partnerships with the ag tech. So some of the tools that will be available in a few years, and some of the tools that are already available. And then as well I'm going to talk about some of the gaps in this field that is an emerging field, and perhaps take some input from the audience through some interactive questions and answer or pooling that is going to be done during the presentation, to get the opinions from the consultants themselves on what they would like to see and what directions they think it's AI can most help them towards.
And this is such an interesting topic when we're talking about artificial intelligence and the use in agriculture, because it seems like there are so many different uses in agriculture. Now, when we're talking about AI and soil, what are some of the ways that AI can help with improving our soil quality?
So we have a lot of data about soil that has been collected throughout the years from USDA and other institutions. We have a lot of data that companies are collecting on farmers' fields, and consultants are collecting on farmer fields. So AI can help us leverage this knowledge from all this data that is available from legacy surveys from different agencies or other entities, and together with big data that is available either from satellite or from other types of platforms, we can help make better sense and gather better and more accurate information with very high spatial variability. Because at the moment we are kind of stuck at the bottleneck that current soil maps, for example, are only accurate and at the landscape scale. Say, like if you're looking for the soil type that a few neighboring fields that you're expected to see in these few neighboring fields, but we don't have a very good knowledge about what is going on at the short spatial scale. So, what's the soil type at each specific spot within a field? And that type of knowledge is very important for better tailoring the water management, for example, or the nutrient management, which are requirements that the growers are going to be requested to meet more and more in the future to be eligible for grants from the NRCS, for example, the soil water and conservation grants, or for increasing the productivity and environmental sustainability of their farm operations. Better, more accurate, and with higher spatial resolution type of information, so that you can address the site-specific needs of plants across their entire farms, basically.
And isn't it interesting how much we can get site-specific when we're talking about our advances in technology? We get it down to such a small area of what exactly is going on in the soil and in the crop.
Yeah. So at the moment, people could do it as well, but at the moment, it's fairly cost prohibitive, because to gather high resolution information from a farm where we don't have really other information from the past, we need to gather samples at a very high resolution, or deploy a lot of sensors that are very burdensome in terms of cost for farmers. But AI and data science can allow us find relevant information from data sets from other locations, and bring that type of information to a new unknown farm where only a little bit of a local surveying for, you know, either like a few soil sensors or some soil cores or some other type of a limited local surveying will be available, will be needed to adjust models that are developed for, say, an entire state to that specific new location. So we can leverage data from other locations to get a better understanding of what's going on at the new farm as well. So the promise here is to develop these new methods that can allow having very high quality product or knowledge to at a very like a much cheaper price than would otherwise needed nowadays.
All right, and then we don't want to give too much away because we want people to come to your session and listen. But what would be just a couple of key topics, or excuse me, a couple of key points that people will get when they come to your session at the conference?
Well, we'll talk about the currently available knowledge from university and like companies and tools on, especially on soil mapping and detecting plant abiotic stress. So those are like a main two areas of focus. But also we're going to talk about what AI means and what automation means. What are the different types of automation that we might be able to see? What are the different types of AI that we might be able to see? Because when you talk about AI, most people will think about you know, robots or whatever that or tractors that do everything by themselves, but there are a lot of different types of AI that can help, from automating like data collection to data interpretation through the internet, or simply detecting, putting a new sensor on a tractor or on a drone that can help detect new parameters that are desired from either the grower or the crop consultant. We're going to take a look at the different types of AI, different types of tools, especially for soil spatial variability and abiotic stress.
These are just some of the things happening today. There's still time to head out to the conference. If you missed it today, you can catch it on the final day tomorrow. There's more information at myaglife.com. Our news brief is up next. We will be right back.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns live in person on September 16th and 17th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this must-attend conference features 2 days of educational seminars, a live trade show, and honorariums and scholarships given by Western CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Hear the top experts in their field speak on pest management, artificial intelligence and new technologies, as well as the latest on soil health, nitrogen, and irrigation management. DPR and CCA credits will be available over the 2 days. For more information on credits, topics, and registration, visit progressivecrop.com/conference. Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com. Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Here's your news for today. California Farm Bureau President Jamie Johansen applauded President Joe Biden's decision to nominate Elaine Trevino as his top agricultural trade negotiator. Trevino, who is from California's Central Valley, is president of the Almond Alliance of California. She previously worked on international trade programs as Deputy Secretary of the California Department of Food and Agriculture under former governors Gray Davis and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Johansen is urging her swift confirmation by the U.S. Senate. Meanwhile, the leadership of the Senate and House Agriculture Committees applauded the recent nominations by President Joe Biden to Commodity Futures Trading Commission. President Biden nominated Roxton Benham as CFTC chair and Kristen Johnson and Christy Goldsmith Romero as commissioners. In 2019, Benham spearheaded the establishment of CFTC's Market Risk Advisory Committee's Climate-Related Market Risk Subcommittee. President Biden this week is learning about and talking about the worsening wildfire situation. Gary Crawford has more.
I'm here to hear what's on your mind and what more that I should be doing, my administration be doing, to try to help.
President Biden talking with firefighters and others as he toured the government's interagency fire center in Boise, Idaho, Monday afternoon, then on to California to be briefed on the fire situation there and to survey one major fire from the air. Later, telling reporters in California that so far this year,
the nationwide over 44,000 wildfires have burned nearly 5,300,000 acres, roughly the size of the state of New Jersey.
He said part of the problem is that forest managers have not been given enough money over the years to do a good job of forest maintenance, including systematic removal of dead trees and dry brush. But he also said,
we can't ignore the reality that these wildfires are being supercharged by climate change,
which he says has to be dealt with in a big way. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The drought in the West is shaping up to be what's known as a mega drought. Stephanie Ho has more information about how experts make that determination.
When USDA Chief Meteorologist Mark Brusberg talks about the current drought, he does not mince his words.
This drought is profoundly bad. It's actually a record-breaking or near record-breaking drought, at least in recorded history.
He was speaking to a group of elected and appointed officials at a national briefing hosted by USDA's Office of External and Intergovernmental Affairs.
A mega drought is a drought, not just a severe drought, but one that is unrelenting. It lasts for decades.
On September 2nd, the U.S. Drought Monitor released a map showing that 54% of the West was in extreme to exceptional drought, otherwise known as D3 and D4 drought.
A D4, which is exceptional drought, is a drought of historic record. It's supposed to only occur maybe once or twice every 100 years. D3 is, 20 to 50 years of drought. So these are really the two highest, most severe categories of drought. And as such, they should be the droughts that are the least commonly observed.
However,
going back throughout the history of the Drought Monitor, which became operational in early 2000, they have seen several periods where they would have had exceptional to extreme drought. And you would not expect that. Now, you can have some abatement locally, but then after just a brief period of relief, they go right back into drought.
Other factors exacerbate these natural cycles. One documented change is higher temperatures.
Warming does a lot of things. It makes it easier to evaporate moisture through plant processes and just through evaporation. It makes the air masses drier.
Warmer temperatures also cause what he calls snow drought.
The snow drought is pretty simple. It's warm to the point where some of the storms, even if they bring near normal precipitation, some of the storms themselves might be warm to the point where instead of snow, they're getting rain. And we're also seeing warming in the spring, which is melting the snow faster.
As an example, he points to data from California from April 2021.
Not only did they receive less snowfall than they normally would have, it melted faster. They basically got cheated twice. They had dryness, some of the storms were rainy wet, and then the snow that they did get melted quicker than normal.
Another factor involves competing demands for water in places like the Klamath Basin.
In this basin, you have a lot of competition. You've got farmers or ranchers who were basically invited by the government to come farm there in the early 1900s, and they just don't have enough water to farm when you take into consideration that there are other people who need the water, and that there are tribal groups who depend on this water, And then you have salmon fishermen who are also depending on this water. So something has to give.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Higher commodity prices are contributing to a sharp increase in U.S. net farm income in 2021. However, under current policies, farm income could drop again in 2022 as government payments decline and production expenses rise. That's according to the September University of Missouri Food and Agriculture Policy Research Institute baseline report. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack heads to Italy this week to attend the G20 Agriculture Ministers meeting. The Department of Agriculture says Vilsack will reaffirm the United States' commitment to international engagement on agriculture and make the case for joint action on climate, food security, agricultural innovation, and closer global integration through trade. The meeting seeks to build consensus around shared concerns ahead of the G20 Leaders Summit 2021, planned for late October in Rome. With corn harvest preparations just around the corner, many farmers already have their sights set on the 2022 growing season. Michael Clements reports.
To put the odds for maximum yield potential in farmers' favor, Golden Harvest is adding 19 new corn hybrids to its broadly adapted corn portfolio. Andy Ackley, corn product manager for Golden Harvest, shares more about the game-changing corn products that will be available for the 2022 season.
The new Golden Harvest hybrids range in relative maturity from 90 to 117 days and include four hybrids with AgriSure Artesian technology, the most advanced water optimization technology for season-long performance, six hybrids with the AgriSure Viptera trait, the most comprehensive above-ground insect control and the only effective against western bean cutworm, 12 hybrids with the AgriSure Duracade trait for above and below ground insect protection and best-in-class corn rootworm control, 18 hybrids available as Easy Refuge seed blend products providing a convenient in-bag seed blend, and in select geographies, Golden Harvest will offer five new Inogen corn hybrids for 2022. In the ethanol market, Inogen grain enhances the ethanol production process by improving process efficiency, while Inogen feed corn hybrids can deliver more available energy when incorporated into dairy or beef cattle rations.
Ackley says these 19 new hybrids will join a widely adapted corn portfolio.
By listening to farmers first and prioritizing our research and development, we're able to offer corn hybrids that surpass the status quo and make maximum yield potential a reality. National trial data from 2020 Syngenta first-party trials show that many of our existing hybrids have proven performance. For example, Golden Harvest Corn G80Q01 3220 Easy Refuge brand out-yielded all Pioneer products tested in multiple national trials by over 6.5 bushels to the acre. Golden Harvest Corn G91V51 brand out-yielded all Pioneer products tested in multiple national trials by over 4.6 bushels to the acre. And Golden Harvest Corn G02K39 5122 Easy Refuge brand out-yielded all channel products tested in multiple national trials by over 3.1 bushels to the acre.
As a whole, Ackley says the 2022 Golden Harvest corn portfolio offers many benefits to farmers.
The mix of proven performers and new hybrids offer farmers a broad choice of solutions to maximize yield potential on their unique acres. Because of Golden Harvest's exclusive technology and innovative research and development process, farmers can count on both the proven performers and the new hybrids to deliver innovative traits, strong genetics, and outstanding agronomics, in addition to unmatched service from Golden Harvest Seed Advisors. Contact your local Golden Harvest Seed Advisor to learn more about our corn product portfolio and start planning for 2022 now.
To learn more about the 2022 Golden Harvest corn portfolio and discover which hybrids are right for your fields, visit goldenharvestseeds.com/seed-guide. Michael Clements reporting.
That's your news for today. We will be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
The USDA hosted the Federal Food Loss and Waste Roundtable Wednesday. One of the speakers was from San Diego. Sarah Fete is with the San Diego Food System Alliance. She spoke on what the organization is doing to help prevent food waste. Here are her comments.
Thank you to the USDA for inviting us to join this roundtable. Really excited to be here with all of you today to share a little bit about the San Diego Food System Alliance and the work that we're doing around food waste, as well as showcase one of our initiatives, the Save the Food San Diego Eco Challenge. So I'll just start with a brief overview of our organization. The San Diego Food System Alliance is a nonprofit organization with a mission of cultivating a healthy, sustainable, and just food system in San Diego County. The Alliance really is a powerful network of over 150 multi-sector organizations across the food system, and we work to promote collaboration, influence policy, and catalyze transformation across the food system. And one of the food system issues that we particularly focus on is food waste, and we do that through our Wasted Food Prevention Program. And this is the program that I manage. And really the goal of the program is to provide comprehensive and specialized services to a variety of food waste stakeholders, which includes government agencies, businesses, nonprofit organizations, and residents as they take steps to reduce their food waste. And we kind of organize the work that we do in the program into these three key areas that you see here on the slide. So the first is network development, really building off of the Alliance's role as a convener. We bring together food waste stakeholders and organizations in collaborative spaces and conversations. We also provide technical assistance and supportive services to cities and jurisdictions as they're working to prepare for SB 1383, which is legislation here in the state of California that set up quantifiable targets for food waste reduction and is really significantly ramping up food recovery in our region. And lastly, consumer education, where the focus is educating residents across San Diego County about the issue of food waste and then providing them with strategies for food waste prevention. And one of our consumer education programs that I'll be talking about today is our Save the Food San Diego Eco Challenge. So the Eco Challenge was a fun social competition that used a customized online platform that combined food waste tracking challenges with consumer education. And to kind of explain that a little bit more, I've outlined the three primary goals that we had for the program. So the first was to engage residents and households as the target audience for these food waste tracking challenges. So we were directly engaging participants in tracking and recording their food waste 5 times during a 15-month period. And we wanted to focus specifically on households because we know that they are a unique audience for food waste intervention, particularly around long-term interventions that involve data collection around food waste. Our second goal was then to provide those participants with easy tips, tricks, and strategies for reducing their food waste at home. And we did that through a robust consumer education campaign. So throughout the 15-month program, we were providing our participants with a variety of materials on specific food waste prevention strategies. And primarily, we were focusing on meal planning, smart grocery shopping, zero waste cooking, and proper food storage. And then the last goal that we have was really quantifying food waste behavior change. And more specifically, we were really aiming to reduce food waste by 10% in our target population. So in other words, the question that we were trying to answer with the Eco Challenge was, if we have households actively engaged in tracking and recording their food waste, and if we provide them with specific strategies for food waste prevention, can that result in a measurable reduction in their food waste? So if you're wondering what it looks like to have households track their food waste, I have some images here on the slide to kind of show you how that worked for our Eco Challenge program. So as you can see, we provided each participant with a high quality scale that they would use to actually weigh out their food waste. And then we fully customized the Eco Challenge website so that participants could actually log on and record their food waste directly on the website. So that screenshot that you see here on the left-hand side of the screen is kind of what that looked like for our participants. So having mentioned these kind of three programmatic goals for the Eco Challenge, I really wanted to walk through the outcomes of our program with respect to each of those goals. And first, just starting off by looking at food waste reduction. So over the course of the program, we were able to recruit over 800 participants across six partner institutions as participants in the Eco Challenge program. Now, with our program being 15 months in length, as you might imagine, one of the challenges that we did face was just keeping participants engaged in tracking their food waste for that length of time. So of the 887 participants, we had around 391 that participated in the food waste tracking component of the program in some capacity. But among those program participants that completed the five food waste tracking periods, we found a 38% reduction in household level food waste, which was incredible and really far exceeded that 10% goal that we had initially set at the start of the program. And on the graph here on the slide with kind of that lighter blue line, you can see that consistent reduction in food waste levels as compared to baseline. You can also see this kind of interesting trend that we've highlighted here between January and May of 2020, where it looks like household level food waste actually increased slightly. And we know that January to May of 2020 actually directly corresponds to the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic and the shelter in place orders that went into effect here in California. So even though this was data that we didn't intend to collect at the start of the program, we think this could have some really interesting implications as we kind of continue to study the impact of the pandemic on household level food waste. So then looking at our second goal of providing participants with food waste prevention strategies through consumer education, not only were we directly distributing materials to our participants through emails, newsletters, really cool refrigerator magnets, like the example that you see here on the slide, but participants actually also had the option to complete what we called food waste reduction actions on the Eco Challenge website. And by the end of the program, our participants had completed over 24,000 of those actions. And we also really leveraged social media as a communication channel to distribute our consumer education materials, especially after COVID-19 made it a little bit harder to reach our participants in person. And through those channels, we garnered over 460,000 social media impressions. And lastly, we really wanted to evaluate what the impact of our program was on our participants beyond just the food waste reduction numbers. So after completing the program, we sent a post-evaluation survey to our participants to collect more of that qualitative data. And what we found was that 90% of our survey respondents reported that they had an increased awareness of food waste after participating in the Eco Challenge, and that 93% of them would actually recommend the program to a friend. And this was just incredible for us to hear. And really one of the highlights of the Eco Challenge has been hearing the reflections and feedback from participants just on how their mindset around food waste has changed after being in the program and the really specific and tangible changes that they've made to their habits or their daily lives. And I've shared some of those reflections on the screen for you all to take a look at. So even though the Eco Challenge itself was just a 15-month pilot program, this feedback really helps validate kind of the sustainability of our initiative. And knowing that participants can continue to use the skills and strategies that they've learned even after the end of the program. And more broadly, you know, our experience with the Eco Challenge has informed and continues to inform the consumer education work that we're doing through our Wasted Food Prevention Program.
We are talking about sustainability when we come back. We'll be right back.
Agromiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives,
AgriMiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpak R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, AgriMiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpak 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Don't let your soils become tainted and unproductive from excess salts. Take care of your crops while caring for your soil. Cation X5 Plus by AgroPlanté is a soil conditioner meant to maximize water penetration by combating harmful salts in the soil, which can injure your crops and bottom line. Cation X5 Plus also corrects sulfur and calcium plant deficiencies. AgroPlanté wants to help you grow your crop. Contact us today to find out more at 559-498-0388 or visit us at www.agroplanté.com.
The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow.
Up next, a guest interview from a former president of the National Association of Farm Broadcasters, Lori Boyer.
Today, our discussion will be on sustainability. I am joined by Leanne Pierce. She is the Food and Agribusiness Industry Advisors Manager with Wells Fargo. And before we start talking about sustainability, Leanne, let's talk a little bit more about you and your background.
Yeah, thanks, Lori. I grew up on a farm, and my colleagues will tell you I was a hands-on farm gal and still am. We grow a little bit of wine grapes around our house here. So my passion has been agriculture for a long time, and I'm really happy to serve our customers here at Wells Fargo in that capacity. My team provides expertise throughout the nation and on all things agriculture, mainly focused on the processing side of it.
Leanne, can you talk to me more about the Food and Agribusiness Industry Advisors team at Wells Fargo and what you do?
Our team covers many sectors, so and I believe you spoke with Carol on food and beverage, but the team also covers almost every ag commodity out there, including specialty crops, grains and oil seeds, and crop input. So we work very closely with Dr. Michael Swanson, who's our ag economist. And we work to go out and do risk analysis and also to do presentations to our customers to show that Wells Fargo is knowledgeable about agriculture and really cares about their business. So, the team has a varied workload, but that is the basic thing we do is to go out, assess businesses, and utilize the knowledge that we gain from that, you know, to try and help move the needle.
So being proactive in getting agribusinesses to adopt and accept sustainability practices is one of the major goals of your team.
We're out across the country a lot. My team travels a lot, and so we do have that opportunity. We bring in our other partners. Wells Fargo does a great job with this. We have a sustainability program that we try to follow ourselves, but also to help our customers understand, you know, what it is and why it's important. So we will bring that conversation to the table and try to help them understand by that talking about what they're doing, you know, is meaningful to the consumer and will help them sell their product in the future.
Now let's go ahead and talk about sustainability. Why should ag producers care about it and what's in it for them?
Because the customers demand it, the consumers demand it. There's a survey out by the Food and Health Insight.org, and they say 54% of boomers actually care about sustainably grown food, and that number rises to 58% of millennials. So I think this is an ongoing item as climate change continues to, you know, arise.
How do you define sustainability? What is it?
Yeah, so I think this is a producer-defined program. My experience comes from the wine business, and as the winery started to demand sustainably grown fruit, the producers came together to really define themselves, what that meant. The grower associations brought them together. And so by creating those protocols, they were able to start to speak to their sustainable practices in a meaningful way.
And based on that, Leanne, would I be correct in saying that all segments of the ag industry have their own definition of sustainability?
It could be, because the practices vary across agriculture.
You mentioned the wine growers in California. Can you explain how their sustainability program works?
There are several, but the one that I'm most familiar with is on the Central Coast here where I sit, and it's called SIP Certified, and it's a series of protocols that, you know, go through how they use their water, what their growing practices look like in terms of fertilization and nurturing the vines, you know, really what their labor force is doing and how they're treating them. It's a whole series of protocols, and it just kind of goes down a list, and they have to demonstrate that they have met those protocols to get a sustainable certification on the SIP program. It's very meaningful. They can really have great conversations.
In that example, did the California wine industry develop their own protocols for sustainability, or did they have an outside third party do that for them?
I believe that they use a lot of resources. The California Wine Grape Growers Association is kind of the overarching for many different grower associations. And they had already utilized them and also the Wine Institute research and government programs that were in place to create those protocols. So they did a lot of research and developed something that would be meaningful for the wineries and the consumers ultimately that were drinking that wine.
Do these sustainability practices cost more for producers?
It depends on the farmer and what they were doing before, but in this case, most of them were able to talk about what they've been doing for decades, right? They just didn't have a framework to really get the message out that, hey, we're already farming sustainably. So for many, the cost may have risen a little bit, but they were basically already farming in that sustainable manner, you know, for a long time. So not a lot of budget increase there.
And then on the retail end, do consumers end up paying more or paying a premium for sustainability practices?
Not that I've seen. What it does is allow that winery to put that, you know, sustainably grown certification on their bottle more easily. So what it will do is attract that consumer perhaps to that specific wine because they know it's been sustainably farmed and, you know, the whole supply chain has been concerned about that.
Leanne, my next question is, how do sustainable and regenerative farming practices play together?
I see them as sort of working hand in hand. The sustainability is sort of the first step in the process, right? If you're going to talk about carbon sequestration and how you're farming to create that, sustainability conversation goes along with that. So I believe they play very well together and that they can be stepping stones for each other.
And in looking forward, do you believe customers will continue to demand sustainably grown products?
I really do because, you know, I talked about that survey, the Food and Health Survey by foodinsight.org, where they had, you know, surveyed a bunch of consumers about what was important to them. And that sustainably grown carbon footprint message really did capture the attention of those consumers in the survey. So I do believe that is an ongoing trend.
I want to thank my guest for joining me here today, Leanne Pierce. She is the Food and Agribusiness Industry Advisors Manager with Wells Fargo. I'm Lori Boyer.
That's our show for today. If there's a topic you'd like to hear more about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.